Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Malfunction Junction. This is Andrew. Thank you for joining us. I am joined here today by Jonathan Herrera, who is the lead actor in Night Cook, the film that we are getting close to being finished with. I'm hoping it's...
We're all hoping.
I know. At this point, it's a money thing, and it's a... Which is, by the way, I'll link the GoFundMe in the bio. Wait, hold on. Which one of these is? And then if you donate, we'll give you one of these.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Please donate. We need help with this. But I would like to get some clearance for the songs. I have a band I've become friends with who have said that they will help out with the music, like the actual playing of the music. So that's cool. I'm doing some favors for them right now, so kind of paying it off in that. But a shout out Bear Hat, if we're still going to do that, we'll see. But still shout out Bear Hat because they're awesome. Cool bluegrass band up in Boulder.
I was just about to ask what kind of band.
Yeah. They have an interesting take on bluegrass. They have a flute involved in it. They have drums involved too, like a light drummer. But then they also have like a flute. The flute guy, Josh Wexler, is fucking... I hope I got his name right. I'm pretty positive I got his name right. But he's fucking awesome. He fucking rips on that thing. And it adds... like it's one of those things that like adds to the layer of bluegrass that you didn't know like it was missing.
Definitely not an instrument you would... associated with bluegrass as a flute.
No. It's super interesting. It's very kind of innovative almost. Charlie, the guy that is the frontman of the band, the guitar player and the songwriter, mostly, he writes most of the songs, I believe. But he came on, what is it, probably 6 months ago now. I think he's going to come on again soon, too. Charlie White, shout out Charlie. He's fucking cool as shit, and he's been very graceful to me. Is that the right word? Very gracious to me when I've shown up to the shows lately. I went like back to the green room, which that was cool. Never got to really do that much, and like go hang out with the band after the show. Their green room at this venue was actually green. I was kind of...
I've been in a lot of green rooms, and a handful of them are green.
Yeah, a handful of them are green. Cool. I didn't really expect that, to be honest with you. I didn't know what I expected. I walked in, I was like, that was the first thing I thought. Wow, it's actually green. But yeah, so, John, let's get to know you a little bit. Where are you from?
I'm originally from New York City, once upon a time, is where I started out. And then went to school in Western Maryland, Frostburg State University, where I studied theater.
Okay.
Under some really, really talented professors. Definitely an underrated school. Definitely was an underrated theater program. I have no idea what's going on there now. Everybody I know is retired.
Right.
As it's been an eternity. I've been out for
sure.
2 decades. Oh my God. I'm dating myself.
Yep. That, I'm obviously not there yet, but I've been getting to the point where it's like high school was what, however many, I think it's, I'm dating myself now. I think it's 12 years ago, 10, 11, 12 years ago. So it's like, it's a weird feeling getting older, despite how, like, no matter how old you are, once you get past like 25, I think you're like, oh shit.
You hit your 30s and then you're starting to notice that the years start going faster and faster. And
it's, yeah.
And I figured that one out at a really young age, why time seems so slow when you're a kid and everything seems to take so long when you're an adult.
Right.
Everything passes by, and that's because it all has to do with the total. Because the percentage of your life that an hour is when you're a child is a really long percentage of your life. That's day, a point. Yeah. 6 months, a year, that's forever because you're only a few years old.
Right.
But when you're 20... 30, 40, a year is now 1/20th, 1/30th, 1/40th of your lifespan.
Absolutely.
And that just flies by.
Yeah, that makes sense. And it's like,
I can't
believe... you can compare it to past years where you're like, well, I mean, I guess it wasn't as bad as that year, or it was better than, you know, these years. And then you're like, look back on it, you're like, wow, wait, it's December.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, oh shit, the whole year just passed by. What did I do this year? Like, fuck.
Yep. Exactly.
Speaking of that, it's December 2nd today, which is.
Reminds me, I got to pay my rent by tomorrow.
Yeah, I think I paid it last night. I had to check on that. That's one of those things that you like want to make sure you did.
It's usually one of those things I know whether I did or not, but I always wait to the last minute, so.
Yeah. Let me fix this. Okay. So early on, who or what influenced you to go down the road of acting and, you know, art, to be an artist, really?
So I guess my art actually started with singing.
Okay.
Doing chorus in elementary school. that kind of progressed into, by high school, that progressed to show choir.
Okay.
And in show choir is where I was really introduced to, you know, my first set of acting shows, where I started going out for musicals and auditioning for those. Ironically, it was to get out of being in the chorus. Being in show choir, yeah, you were required to be in the chorus of every one of these shows. And I hated dancing. And there were always these big dance numbers for the chorus. But what I noticed was, hey, wait a minute, all the ensemble people, they get to sit out and not have to do any of these big numbers. They have their own numbers that are, you know, make sense. And I didn't realize how much time they were putting in after school also. At that time, that was something I learned later, which I ended up falling in love with, so it didn't matter, but it did clash with sports, so
right.
I had that constant stress between my coaches and my my theater people fighting with me for my time.
That's a stressful time. Is that high school you're talking about?
That was high school.
Yeah, that's a stressful time of, like... I mean, you think like it's like the world at the time, because I mean, going back to like what you've got, what you said about time being relative to how much time you've experienced, it's time at that point feels like, well, I've got to do this to get to my future, and it really, you know, it was kind of, I mean, I don't know. We were talking a little bit outside about the Eastern philosophy thing that I'd been trying to go with, and just like kind of roll with the punches type thing,
right?
Which is a terrible way to describe Eastern philosophy, but roll with the punches, essentially, is how I've dissected it all the way down.
Just rolling with it.
Rolling with like what?
A leaf on the wind.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that when we get to the point of that leap to the future, in any sense, really, of like, if you think there's supposed to be some sort of leap into anything, I'm hoping it's one of those things that just happens. And that you leap into what you're wanting to do, hoping to do, desiring to do, working to do with your life. But like, I'm hoping that that's how it happens. But of course, I got no idea. I have no idea. So what influenced you from there?
From there, it went on to, I went on to college and ended up being a theater major by accident. I needed something to take up my free time, right. And I ended up going out to audition for Oedipus, because I saw audition notices and I had no idea, to be honest, what Oedipus was at the time.
I don't still don't know what that is. What is that?
Oedipus?
Yes.
So Oedipus is a famous Greek play.
Okay. I must have missed a word in the context or something.
Oedipus Rex.
Sure.
So, I went out for that play just needing something to do.
Okay.
And here I am in, in college now, in a much different setting, where there are people who actually major in this. There were people who actually came out, auditioned, and got scholarships for this.
Oh, boy.
And I come out and walk in out of nowhere and get cast as Oedipus.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, so there was a lot of hubbub about who the hell is this guy just walking in, and at least among the other students and actors. This led to a meeting between me and the department head, who basically gave me an hour-long lecture of why I should be a theater major.
Oh, boy.
And,
yeah.
And I switched majors, and...
what were you majoring in before that, did you say? I'm sorry.
I think I was majoring in communications or engineering. Okay. I don't honestly remember. I hadn't really set my course yet at that time.
Yeah, and then teacher comes in and is like, hey, come over here.
Well, he said, you know, he called me and asked me if I had some time to come to his office and chat with him. And so, you know, this is obviously somebody big and important.
Right.
Richard Keggy was his name. And we're still Facebook friends. He's still active as a director and producer in upstate New York, I believe.
Okay. Nice.
And I definitely owe my acting start to him.
Sure.
Getting me involved. I don't know what would have happened if he hadn't called me and convinced me to switch over.
Yeah, I guess that's something. Yeah, that's like the question we all wonder is like, what would have happened if I'd gone down that path?
Because I ended up doing a lot more shows. I think I was in 5 shows that first year.
Oh, nice!
All leading roles.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah. So it was, and it was a lot of fun. I really enjoy doing theater. I kind of miss it at the moment.
Sure.
It's odd in my adult life how I find it difficult to squeeze in the time for theater, and film being brand new for me.
Okay.
Really, because outside of a documentary reenactment I did some 18 years ago, outside of that, if you discount that, I really only started less than, 2 years ago.
Oh, shit.
So.
Okay. Well, I mean, when we had you in for the audition, we obviously were... We had... I think we auditioned, 14 people overall. That for everything, for the 4 different roles that we had. And mm-hmm. there were only a couple of different women that came in. But when you came in, we were like, oh, shit, there's someone, that's actually, knows what he's doing with... this. So you don't, if you're thinking it's like, well, my experience doesn't like it, you didn't show it, you know, you came in and we're like, oh shit, we were like, okay, yeah, that guy, dude, let's put him at Gary, he's perfect for every part of it. Like, it was just like, let's do it. And Travis and I both were like, right now, let's just write him in and we'll call him in a couple of days and tell him. And what is a failure that taught you something?
Oh God, what is a failure? Jeez. My whole life has been one failure after another. I don't know what one lesson I've taken out of any of my failures.
Oh, no.
Not to depend too strongly on other people, and at the same time, I can contradict myself even on that one.
Sure.
I guess just learning to take personal responsibility of stuff. My dad used to always berate me, even to my adult life, about how everything was always my fault, even when things weren't my fault. And and it came down to basically putting myself into situations, as opposed to I might not have been... the spark that set something off. I was just had a habit of always being in the wrong place at the wrong time. And the choices that led to me being in those places, in those positions, that was my fault.
I know that life.
So that was something I think I learned from a number of failures.
That's a good thing to learn from a number of failures. That's, I feel very similar to that because it's been, like you said, one failure after another. And then it's also the only thing that you can learn that is, it's not necessarily, even if, you put yourself in the situation, it didn't just happen to you. You are not a victim here. It's just you figured out a way to put yourself in a situation where you were in a position to get this to happen to you. And I think about it a lot because I don't know if we talked much about during the, and the people that listen, anyone that listens to this knows this, but I got stabbed in a fight.
No,
yeah. I
don't think you told me that.
Yeah, I got stabbed in the face, in the head right here, and in the neck, down the shoulder, in the Yeah, so like legit, like stabbed, and like not just like a like. I mean, people get stabbed, and I've seen other people's scar wounds, and they like anybody that takes a knife is like fucking hell yeah, brother. But like, dude, the head is like it's brutal, and so I obviously like at first it's like when it first happens, like why did this happen to me? What's going on? And then you like as you get more removed from the situation. And more removed from the product of the situation you put yourself in, you have to grow to accept that. And when I was able to finally accept that, I remember I was on ketamine, which I use every now and then as a I did the therapy for it, like I like went in with a doctor and had it shot up and all that, and like I did that for about a year and a half in Austin, Texas. And then I did, like, the nasal spray with it. I had, like, a home nasal spray that I took home and just went to the fucking moon. I called it my bottle of moon juice. And
I've actually never done ketamine.
It's fucking wonderful.
It's on the list. It's on a very short list of drugs I haven't done.
It's a fucking wonderful one. If you do it right. And I would say, like, there are a bunch of places. I had a girl on, Alex Kirshner, a couple weeks ago that works for Mind Bloom. I don't know if I should have said that. We'll write that down. 16, 12, 14. I put that down anyway. We're good. She came on a couple weeks ago. She like does like the. I think what the company does, I'm not 100% sure on this, but I think they'll like send you the doses of ketamine, and like then you go to the therapy session on a virtual chat with some therapist that's licensed to do this and has done this. Or if it's in your area, you go do it in person. But this is the way she does it. She does it like a virtual session. And the person like administers their dose and goes. And she just kind of sits there with them while they're on a fucking different planet, because that's where you're going. And then talks to them about it when they come to. And that's kind of what I had. But I did it in person for like a year and a half. And it like allowed me to kind of have therapy with myself on a whole bunch of different things. And it like allowed me to, it honestly allowed me to come to like a acceptance of like, not just what had happened in my life, but like of the person that I was. And I remember the night that I like finally came to like an acceptance of like, this was my fault. I was on ketamine and I was drinking, and I realized, like, I went into this space where it was like processing all of the different drugs I was doing, and I went to like finding uses for them. Like, what does this one do? What does this one do? What does this one do? And I got to alcohol, and it was basically like, oh, it was like fire. Like, just everything, like, the experience that I was having was like, it like the whole thing lit on fire. And I was like, oh shit. I immediately got up and I threw up in the toilet, which I realized, like, you know, I was doing that every morning, and I was like, I think it's the booze. And I went into like my room. I realized I was like just in a super dark place, and it was at an old apartment that I didn't like. It was just kind of sketchy and everything. It was just a dark place, like mentally and physically. And I just like said like to myself, like, I'm sorry, dude. Like, I love you. I'm sorry. But that is your fault. Like, I won't do that again to you, type shit. And I, like, it felt like a physical weight left me. And, like, I went out and I grabbed, like, the bottle of, or it was, I think I was drinking White Claw that night. And I drank it, and I haven't drank since. Because I, like, had, like, it allowed me to, like, come to, like, it felt like what left me was, like, what was causing me to drink, like excessively. Which I was drinking, like, to death. And, like,
I went through a phase of that straight out of high school, where I was drinking after a bad breakup. Mm-hmm. And I was drinking myself to death. I've got friends that drink like that now, and I look at it and, you know, I used to drink like that. Oh my God, that was crazy. But it passed for me.
Right.
Whereas other people, you know, I was 18. I shouldn't, you know, technically shouldn't have even been drinking. And I would just be polishing off, you know, a fifth of vodka every night after work, crying myself to sleep.
As you do with when you polish off a fifth of vodka.
Right. So that one was just kind of a, I guess a little bit like yours, like a revelation of what am I doing here? And I need to stop. And I made some drinking rules for myself back then, you know, and the biggest one, the big two being don't drink when you're in a bad mood and don't drink alone.
Those are actually two pretty good rules.
And that seemed to, you know, work. Now, now I'm not a heavy drinker. I still drink, but I'll drink when I'm in a bad mood.
Right.
Because I'm not an excessive, you know, I'm not an excessive person. I don't like being shit-faced. I don't like being hungover. I don't like feeling like shit.
No.
And something with it, when you get older, it just gets harder to get over all this stuff.
Yeah.
Hangovers come on so much more easily and last so much longer. I'll compare it to ecstasy. I loved the way ecstasy felt. But to me, it was not one evening of feeling good was not worth the next 24 hours of feeling like absolute shit.
Well, and then like the next the 24 hours after that, you feel like 50%.
Mm-hmm. It was like, just the recovery is so long. It's like, yeah. It's not that I don't like it. I just don't like what it costs me.
No, yeah.
You know, and I guess it's kind of the same with drinking. I like drinking. I just don't like what it costs me in the recovery. And so, you know, moderation.
Yeah, that's kind of where I cut it out entirely, but that was kind of where I came to the conclusion of, is like, I don't like what this cost me. This is about to cost me my life. And then a couple of weeks later, like a friend of mine from high school who was like my age now, he died of liver failure.
I've lost two friends to liver failure. Both younger than me.
Yeah, it's like, and so I took that as a sign of like, okay, you made the right decision. And I was like, unfortunately, that is the sign that it had to take. But like a friend of mine dying from liver failure. But it's like
the liver failure friend was not the one that got me, because that friend, you know, not to be mean, but had it coming.
Sure.
I never saw him without a beer or an alcoholic beverage in his hand. Didn't matter where we were. It didn't matter where we were driving. We were driving someplace. Yeah. He'd always have a case of beer in the back seat. And, you know, even when he seemed like he was sober, he was drunk. He was never not drinking. So he had it coming a long time. I begged him every time I see him, cut back, switch to smoking weed, something, moderate. But for me, the friend dying scare that got me was a friend who killed over and died of a heart attack.
Mm.
And he was a small guy.
When was this?
Oh, God. This would have been when I was 39.
Okay.
Yes, when I was 39. Killed over, died of a heart attack, two kids. He's a small, you know, not big guy. And, you know, you're not the kind of person you expect to have a heart attack.
No.
You know, not some big, burly, overweight.
Right.
Absolutely not the kind of person you expect. And so for me, I suddenly started taking my blood pressure seriously. And
going
on. And my blood pressure had been a bit high. My blood pressure had been a bit high and had been just been blown off by the doctor every time. Oh, it's just, you know, you're probably just nervous this time. And I came around to, you know, hey, let's actually look at this. And I think this is serious because this has been all the time. And unfortunately, where I go get my medical treatment, the doctors switch out sometimes. So often seeing a long-term pattern is not something they usually going to do, because you don't have the same doctor, sadly.
Right.
That'd be a nice change in my healthcare. But they started me on blood pressure medications, and it changed a lot of stuff for me. One of the major things for me was my headaches disappeared. I had no idea, but all
the hypertension, probably.
Not hypertension, blood pressure headaches.
Really?
Blood pressure headaches, because just from high blood pressure. I thought they were stress headaches.
Huh.
No, they were blood pressure. I don't get headaches anymore. My blood pressure is down, normal now.
That's good.
I feel better. I breathe better. I sleep better. And as everybody calls it, high blood pressure is the silent killer. And, you know, I had a friend keel over at 39.
That's wild.
From high blood pressure, so.
Huh. Damn. All right. Well, that's good to know. That's a good one to know.
You lose a friend. You start taking health things seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I've lost quite a bit of friends as well, but they've mostly been drugs, and it's like, those are just ones that you're like, all right, well, don't do that.
Exactly. And don't do that. Don't do so much of that.
Yeah, don't do that. And, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, most of them are heroin. And, like, I wasn't much of a heroin guy. I didn't really like it, but I...
Heroin is one of the few drugs I haven't done, but I had a bad reaction to morphine in high school.
Okay.
I had an accident where my finger got caught between two helmets and exploded and
sure.
on a football field. Broken in three places just between the last knuckle and the fingertip.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, three places. What am I saying? 13 places.
Jeez.
So it had to be completely put back together.
Oh, man.
While I waited for my father to
come through. It kind of happened to me, too, but it just got stuck in a face mask and it just, like, did that thing.
Oh, so very similar,
yeah,
actually.
It didn't have to have that quite.
No, mine looked like
no. That's yeah. That's not. That was like what I was.
Just the last digit of the finger. Thank God.
Yeah, that's.
I thought I was gonna, you know, it was gonna be amputated and I was gonna lose it. But my dad's a plastic surgeon, so he took care of it, and not a big deal. But back to the morphine, he sent over his nurse to pick me up, and on the way. Had her stop by my house and pick up a bottle of morphine he kept at the house.
Mm.
She gave me one pill, that's all I had, and I was on cloud nine.
Yeah.
And it's a weird sensation, I remember, because I was in so much pain, and I was just in this state of mind where I don't care.
Yeah.
Wow, my finger is exploded, and it's bleeding everywhere, and it hurts like hell.
Yeah.
Just that sucks.
It's just the, yeah.
That's really the complete mind is really, really weird. I really, you know, I guess I really enjoyed it for what little it was, but the next day I went into full
immediate withdrawal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I went into full chemical withdrawal. I was puking, convulsing like an addict, and all I had was one freaking little
yeah, you're like, pill. No way, dude.
So can't I've always been nervous from morphine because they're
yeah.
the same stuff.
All right. So let's think.
Last thing you asked me was about failure.
That is true. I was going to ask a different question, hopefully, because that was a good answer there. We got a lot out of that one, I think. Let me think. I guess let's go to. What is the best compliment you've ever been given by a stranger?
Oh, that's an easy one.
Nice.
Oddly enough. So when I was in the military, there was a night when I was sitting around with some of the other soldiers, and one of the other guys who I was not close with in my platoon, I don't remember his name, he's not one of the guys I remember, just the story I remember he told. He was telling us about a nightmare he had the night before.
Oh, boy.
And in that nightmare, so our barracks were these trailers on the edge of the woods on the post.
Mm-hmm.
So where, you know, whereas the other barracks were these brick buildings in the middle of, you know, streetlights and everything else. Ours was on this edge of this dark road the edge of a wood line, and they had put down these trailers, and those were our barracks that we stayed in. So in this nightmare, the drill sergeants had abandoned us, and there were monsters coming out of the woods for us, and they were grabbing us one by one and pulling us out. And we have to get out of here. We should make a run for it. No, we shouldn't go outside. There was all this hubbub. And then out of the darkness, I came in a bus out of the darkness, flying out of there, flying up, open the door. Quick, get in. I'm going to get you guys out of here.
That's awesome.
Being the hero in somebody else's nightmare
pretty sick.
Was the biggest compliment I ever got.
That's hilarious.
Yes,
that's hilarious.
I was beaming ear to ear. I didn't say anything to him or anyone else, but to this day that story has always stuck with me because I got to be the hero in somebody else's dream, and that just that said a lot, because a lot did go on in my platoon, and I was the barracks lawyer, so
oh, yeah.
I was that asshole, but that also meant I was that guy that took care of people.
Right.
And okay. And that really drove that home that I was obviously successful at doing that because somebody saw me as a hero.
Well, that's sick. That's a cool compliment. Like, that's like a, that's not just like a generic, like, oh, you're whatever. That's like a, hey, you're like, you're the hero in my dream. That's fucking cool. Hell yeah. What's a compliment you wish you received more often?
I don't know. That, I'm not good at taking compliments at all.
I'm not either.
Compliments seem to embarrass me, so it's not...
No worries.
It's not that I want more of any compliments.
I guess let's ask the question, like, is there a
thing
that you wished people would compliment you more on?
I like compliments that are indirect.
Sure.
The compliment of, you know, when you get a promotion at work or a raise or a bonus for doing a good job. That's
a good point.
That's a good compliment for me. As opposed to just saying something.
Sure.
You know, him telling me that I'm your hero, you're my hero, would have been, you know, really great and all. But a little bit weird, and also not nearly as great a compliment as the story that he told.
Yeah, it's funny.
So I wish I had more stories like that to tell. I wish I had more compliments like that.
Sure. Yeah. Elaborate compliments. That's hilarious. Well, let's get into the part about Night Cook. I'll write down. So... Night Cook, obviously, this film that we are currently in post-production with, coming up on, hopefully. I had said February, and I'm still aiming for that.
Okay.
I had said early February is my latest, like, possible date, and I'm aiming for that now. But, that being said, we're getting there. What about the, I guess, at the time, you know, story pitch that we sent out on a... Facebook thing, that's probably where you got it from.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the role in the film made you want to audition?
Oh, God. So, honestly, at the time, I was still, and I still am, whoring myself out for almost anything that is of interest. Doing something sci-fi was the first thing that got my attention.
Mm-hmm.
Doing anything science fiction is a lot of fun for me.
Right.
There isn't enough of it in the short film world that I get to be a part of, and it's my favorite genre.
Mm-hmm.
So the genre was immediately what attracted me.
Cool.
Right off the bat.
Nice. How did your expectations of making the film meet with the reality of doing it?
It really kind of... Every production is different. Some are bigger sets, some are smaller sets and crews, and this was one of the smaller sets and crews, but when you are used to doing theater, you know, I've been doing, I did theater for, you know, 25, 30 years, and I've done everything from major productions to, you know, stuff thrown together on these tiny rinky-dink stages where it's just a handful of people.
Sure.
So when I work on small productions... It's not a foreign place to me. You know, the most foreign thing for me is when I work on bigger productions and I'm not allowed to help on anything, you know? I was doing, what was the name? I cannot remember the name of the film where I played a evil priest. And,
nice.
And it was just a common thing on set where they would, you know, call out to the director, like, John's helping again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you can't.
Get him off.
Yeah.
You're the talent. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. I just feel like I'm standing around. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah. That's the one thing that I...
That is the hardest thing about acting
in
film as opposed to theater that you never think about at all is how much time you spend just sitting around doing nothing, waiting to act, Whereas in theater, you just, you know, you show up, you go on stage, you for a set amount of time, you are in character. It doesn't stop, and you know, you get your accolades right there from the audience, which is another nice thing. You know, is having that sensation of the audience right in front of you, and feeling them in your hand every breath they take, and of course the applause at the end, knowing that you did a good job. That's all. So nice that you don't get any of that in film, but the standing around.
It's gotta be brutal. Yeah, I remember the first film I made, which was just shown at the Bug Theater recently here in town. It's called Crickets. It's a short film. But I remember I felt bad about the actor just standing around. And because I that was all he had to do. And the actor that we had, Joseph Bowman, he's awesome. But he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was getting into by that point. And so he was just like, hey, don't worry about it. This is part of the job. I was like, cool. I'm so glad that that was the first experience I had with an actor versus some actor that, if it's helping, it's one thing, but if it's whining and complaining, that's a whole different thing. And it's cause it's gotta be brutal just sitting there. To wait. I remember, there were days where I was, so focused on what I was doing on Night Cook that I was, I couldn't think about you guys. But then I'd walk by you guys and be like, shit, I hate that they're just waiting there. I just hate it.
Now I understand why actors have trailers on big sets to disappear to. Now it makes sense because it's the green room is where you are ready to go on stage, on set.
Right.
And in the green room, there's a clock. You're waiting. Or there's a speaker, and you're listening for your line. That's my cue. I gotta go.
Yeah. Did anything in particular about the script of Night Cook get you excited or make you hesitate?
No, but that it takes a lot for something to make me hesitate. I just recently did a short film where I played an ICE agent. And everybody asked me if I had any hesitation. I was like, somebody's got to play the bad guy. As long as I don't get typecast as sure, something, yeah. I can, it's fine. I don't think it's going to destroy my career or anything.
Yeah. That's funny though.
But, there was nothing in the script that was that strong. I recently saw a bit of a podcast where, God, that guy from the actor from the new guy, Road Trip, skinny, real skinny
actor.
I think
I know who you're talking about, and I cannot think of his name.
But he was talking about how he had been offered $1 million to do Scary Movie.
Okay.
And he was, at the time, it was the most money he'd ever been offered.
Right.
Because I think at the time he'd only done Road Trip.
Right.
And his age, and the script was going to require him to suck his own dick.
Oh, my God.
And he was willing to do it, but his agent talked him out of it, saying, I don't think you're the type of person that can come back from that.
Oh, yeah.
some people...
Hey, at least someone told him
that. Can get away with doing that.
At least someone told him that, dude. Holy shit.
But I don't think your career could survive sucking your own dick. On camera.
Holy shit. That's crazy.
So for me, there wasn't anything huge in there or that made That's me crazy. Stop.
Some of these films that they're making, I'm not, the funny thing is, I made a science fiction horror film. I like science fiction. I'm not really into horror. Travis, the one that wrote he wrote the short story. Mm-hmm. And I just turned it into a screenplay. I switched a couple things, but, it just to make it more visible for the screen. And it was more just cause Travis came to me. It was I have this idea. I have this thing that I wrote and I would love if someone would turn it into a movie. And I read it and I was like, this would make, a pretty decent short film. So I jumped on it. I started doing, I guess it was January 12th, I think, is the date that I started working on it, and just reading the thing.
Basically, and then we were shooting by, was it July?
I think it was June. June or July. Actually, there's the clap right behind. It was June 24th was the last day of filming.
End of June, yeah.
Yeah.
That's yeah. a quick turnaround for getting something up and going.
Yeah. And I was in school, too, at the time, taking 15 units. I was busy as fuck last year. Or this year, really. Feels like last year already, but...
I always feel like I was more productive when I was younger. I can always think of, like, rattle off all the things I was doing, and I was like, I was never doing that alone.
Sure.
Like, in high school, I was never just doing show choir alone. I was also doing football or wrestling and track. I was also in student council and the drama club, Spanish club. I had a girlfriend. I had a job, and that, I did all that.
Right.
Right. Like, I did all that. That was part of my schedule in high school. That's like ridiculous. In college, you know, doing my shows, work, doing school, and yeah. now just trying to juggle work and life. It's like, how tough. How did I get so much done when I was younger?
Yeah, it's energy, probably, or maybe like the. Maybe it's like not being beaten down all the way.
Yes.
Yeah, like that happens the older you get. You just get, it's like, all right, fuck, man.
You're just getting ground down yeah. like a pencil.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah, it's, I don't know. And it wasn't, I didn't do that alone. I definitely had quite a bit of help. But I did do quite a bit of it. I definitely put in the most amount of work to it, but I definitely did not do it alone. There were quite a bit of people that helped. Harrison Lee. Lee was like such a sleeper. We did not know that Lee was going to be that helpful. And then of course Magdalene was helpful, but I'm not even bleep out her fucking name just because I am mad at her right now. But whatever, let it be.
That's the thing with film productions is you do need to depend on other people.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
To make it together, it's not something you can do. So theater is something you can, in certain circumstances, get away with. Being a one-man production, you can get away with that, but film is not that kind of animal at all.
No, it's not. What part of the character felt closest to you?
Oh God, being a working in food service.
yep.
I haven't been a cook. It's probably the only position I haven't filled is working on the line in a restaurant, okay. But I've worked everywhere else. I also used to work room service at a hotel. So the idea of, yes, me being this cook that delivers the food to the residents and at a mental institution, that did not seem too far away from some place that I might actually find myself working.
Yeah. That's. I'm glad you were able to find that within it, because like we were able to. We that was one thing we saw in there. Is like I think he'll be able to get into the character. He looks like he's done this job or something similar before, and so I was like, cool, that's perfect. Was there a moment on set when you felt your understanding of the character shift?
Not on this one, because it was a short. It was a short one, and it wasn't really about the character development so much as the situation, right. The situation that you know that driving everything.
How about when the situation shifted then?
Well, we filmed it out of order, so
that's a good point. We definitely did, yeah.
So yeah, that was a. Bit of a that was a bit difficult having to remember where we were in the story and what level right. of stress the character was under at that point.
I know. And I think honestly, just based on what I have piled together, everyone did a great job doing that.
Because if I recall correctly, the very first thing we shot was the very final scene.
No, the very first thing we shot was the second scene. I think, and we shot that,
and then we shot the very last scene.
We shot it in that same day because when it got dark, we shot three, with Michael or James. Shout out James, he's coming on the pod in a few days. Probably release that a week after yours is out. But he was there, and you guys come out and shake hands. That's three. That's and then two is the one where we were in the van with you, and you're coming in. You're parking the van,
which we shot on the last day.
That was the first day, because we shot on.
Oh no, you're talking about when we parked in the parking.
Yeah,
lot.
Parked in yes. the parking lot. Yes. We shot that, and then but we also shot that night, the one that night where it was
where it's supposed to be
the final scene. We right. shot all that, and that was like. Oh man, that was fun. That was a fun night of doing it, but it was definitely it's hard to like
because there's no build up to that. No. That scene is like he's already there. He's already terrified. He's already been running at that point.
Yeah, and man, I would have loved to have shot everything in order.
I have lucky on a number of productions getting to shoot in order, but I always remind myself like this is not how it usually gets done. This is this is luck. This is pure luck that we're getting to shoot all in order.
If I had a legit budget for something where it was like, all right, we got a crew, we got everything that we need, and they're all paid well, everybody's satisfied, and I got all the things. Like I didn't have to fight because I don't know if you knew, but I had to fight with like we switched CD motels. Mm-hmm. Do you remember that? Yeah. Because I had the lady at the first CD motel wanted to charge me like $200 more than she had originally gave us the offer for. And so I had to like fight with her. And finally, I just was like, fine, I'll take my money elsewhere. And just walked out of the front door.
And you found the other place was dirt cheap in comparison.
The other place was dirt cheap in comparison. And actually, not as bad as that one, as the first one. You'd be surprised. It was fucking bad. That motel, which... By the way, they also they skimmed my credit card, or not my credit card, but like one of my bank debit cards that I.
Oh.
Thankfully, boy. It was my business one, so I could just shut it off. Like one of several cards that I had, but it was like they skimmed my card, and it's just like all right, well, great. It's just like fuck, bro. It's like I don't know what else to say about that place other than it was one of the. I would never.
No.
Never spend the night there.
No, I would have to be pretty desperate to spend the night there.
No.
I remember the lamps didn't even have shades on them.
No. There was the cuck chair in the corner.
Yep.
and one of the rooms didn't have air conditioning in it. It was only the back room. Yep. So it was very cold in the back room and incredibly...
Well, it was 105 degrees out during one of those days. Yeah. I remember we had a heat storm. So, yeah, it was really hot. It was one of the few nights where you actually didn't... I remember complaining, actually, that the summer wasn't hot enough for me in the sense that...
Yeah.
And there was like, what? You didn't like the heat? I was like, no, it's not that. It's like, we didn't have any nights where you couldn't wear a jacket.
Right.
That's what I got at, you know? There were no summer nights for me, like, back east where you still t-shirt and shorts weather once the sun went down. That's what we were lacking. But we were not lacking for hot days at all.
No. No. Was there a most difficult shot or sequence to shoot, mentally or technically?
The motel when we were supposed to be running out the window.
Oh, yeah. That was tough.
where there's actually still a window there.
Yep, that's a tough one. Funny enough, it actually it's a quick enough shot that you can't really tell. You have to look real close to be able to tell that it's not, and it's a quick enough cut on like I just did this today where I was working on it this morning that I cut the jump part because and just from the opening window to you sprinting out the. Like that shot we were talking about that we shot on the first day, the last scene.
So you didn't even use me climbing up into the window,
dude. It just didn't look right. It just didn't look right. I was like, I watched. I had Harrison, the sound guy, come over and take a look at the fine cut with me, and he was like, that part doesn't make sense. Something's wrong with it. I was like, I agree. So we just cut that one little sliver, and it makes a significant amount more sense now. Which is good, but that's like the problem with short film is like you have to figure out how to, like you can't just rely on like, okay, well this one part maybe didn't add up all the way, but the rest of it did because there's an hour and a half of it left. But like this will come out to be, I think right now it's at 14 minutes, and I think I maybe will cut it down to 12.
Oh wow!
And so at the least probably 12. And so it's like, that's insane too, because when I first put the footage all together and like the raw cut, like the raw footage all in there, just like the first thing, the rough cut, it was, I think it was an hour and a half or something like that, hour and 15 minutes worth of footage. And it's just like, you gotta whittle it all down to this much footage, and it's just like, it is so much work. But it's also like, once I get into it, it's like, oh, I love doing it. But it's like, that's the problem with anything, really, is starting, I find.
That's kind of how it is with my audiobooks when I start, and it's just getting myself started. But then when it comes to actually editing, I don't mind the editing part. I dread sitting there having to go through the reading and the recording. But then when I actually have to sit there and listen and go back and make the edits to it, I actually don't mind that part as much, especially the ones when I get them back from the author, which are the edits that I miss or ones he wants changed. Those I, you know, because I'm just, here I am. I look at the program, I look at the lines and the graphs across the screen is my, you know, how audio displays.
Sure.
And snip, cut, paste. And I don't mind it at all.
Yeah.
It flies by.
And they make it so easy nowadays on these. What do you use?
I use WavePad, believe it or not.
Okay, nice. I
should be using Adobe Premiere, but that's I'm what I cheap use. Bastard.
The only reason that I still qualify for the student plan for like the next 8 months or something. So like I got like a significantly cheaper version. Like it's the same version of everything, but I just pay less because I qualify as a student still. I'm thinking about changing because I was trained on Premiere and Audition and all that like in college, but it was like I'm looking at the price tag it's gonna charge my card in 8 months or whatever, and it's like $450 bucks or something for.
Oh,
and
so it's the only thing is, slightly up.
Well, it's the Creative Cloud, so you get like most of it, and it's like I have fucking, let's see, like I've got Lightroom, Dimension, Photoshop, Audition, After Effects, Media Encoder, you know, it's like, and all these are free if with the purchase of the Creative Cloud. And so like that's where they get you to pay $500 for everything, because it's like, and like look, I use it for everything I do, so I have to have something like it.
Yeah,
but and Premiere is wonderful, and so is Audition. Audition's a little harder to figure out in my opinion, but Premiere is wonderful. It is a truly very easy program to run once you learn how to use it.
It's what everybody says.
Yeah.
I think I've messed with it once, and so WavePad just started out with something that I needed something free to use at the time.
Sure.
That recorded, and I just ended up stuck with it. I think I actually might still be using the free version. I've tried upgrading. Yeah, I tried upgrading, and my computer wouldn't take the paid version. So I don't know why.
Those processors. It's probably the processor. I had to get, like, when I was switching over to like doing the like company and trying to do like actual video editing work and whatnot and audio editing and everything, I had to get my other computer that I have is like a MacBook Pro 2020, pretty new, you know, but it's like I had to get a new one because that one doesn't, like, I got it for school. It doesn't have like the random access memory, which this one has a whole different thing, which is unified memory, and it's a whole different process of technical processing I don't get. I'm good up to a point with tech, and then it just starts getting like way up here. I'm like, I have no idea. But like names of things, I always struggle with, like names of cameras, because I'm like, I don't, dude, it's like, they're always like GH67 or something, and it's just like, how the fuck am I supposed to know that?
Yeah. In the Army, we had to play that game. Everything has a number and a letter designation. It doesn't stand for anything.
No.
So, yeah. Like bivouac, that was our camping trip in the field. What does bivouac stand for? It doesn't stand for anything.
That's just, yeah.
It's not even short for anything. It was never explained to me.
It's probably all the first letters of the place that it's named after.
It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
But that was one, if anybody knows where bivouac comes from, I'm still waiting to learn 25 years later.
You could write in at malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com or contact John directly. But yeah, I'm sure he'll give his Instagram at the end of the show. But Yeah. Let me pause real quick because I'm going to reset the camera. So we're back here. Sorry, I have to keep doing that. The camera thing is ridiculous right now. This is our first, actually, episode doing a guest with camera at all.
Cool.
Yeah. I've had the capability to do this, but I've wanted more. I wanted a camera. I figured it out. I think I'm going to do one up here or like in the back corner, one in the back corner over there to have like a over the shoulder shot kind of thing. But I just got to figure that out. It's all money.
Yeah. It's all money. It's always money.
It's always money.
It's always money.
It's nothing to do with the ability to get it figured out or desire to want it and make it happen. But it's the money in my pocket to purchase the items. So let's see, where were we? We had we talked about the difficult shot to shoot. Did anything go wrong that helped? It ended up helping the performance or the overall potential
outcome? Oh yeah, you can tell them about that with the scene where we're supposed to be smoking a joint.
Oh my god, yeah.
You guys decided to roll. You decided.
I didn't decide to roll it that fat. It was fat as hell, dude.
Yeah, if it had been weed, I would have actually been so much better off.
I know.
No, instead it had to be a nice fat cigarette, hand rolled cigarette.
And I think James didn't smoke weed like at all, and it was like
that's why, because James doesn't smoke weed, so yeah. We had to use tobacco, and yeah. Just rolled a nice, huge, fatty with no filter.
Nope. Yeah, that's a weird one.
I tried.
You were champ about it, though.
I tried to inhale as little as possible. I really did, but yeah. I did end up having to inhale a little. And I felt, I mean, you said it came out great on camera, but I felt green. Like, I looked green.
You did. You were.
And then, as soon as you stopped, as soon as we finished that scene, I puked my guts out. Yep. And then I laugh about that because I used to smoke cigarettes for over a decade. It's been over a decade since I used to smoke, so I obviously am just not cut out for a cigarette anymore.
Well, I mean, that's a tough cigarette to smoke, too. A filterless rolled cigarette with American Spirit tobacco, I'm sure it was.
That's some Travis. Old cowboy shit.
Yeah, it's Travis shit. I love that shit, too. I love doing the rollies, but like it is like they're way tougher. But yeah, you champed it down. You were like, and in one of the shots that is used if you anyone listening looks out for it, it's there's one shot where you can tell like, oh, he looks kind of what's going on here. But like, you can't tell, and it's such a quick shot on it that you can't really fully tell that like it maybe just like it kind of melds into like maybe he's just high. I've said that to Travis and to Harrison. Like, I think it's perfect because he just looks high, just to say that shot. The you walk towards the camera and say, "Oh, by the way, the werewolves."
don't tell anybody I told you about the werewolves.
Yeah, that shit came out so perfect, and like, it's great. How did our directing relationship work in your perspective?
I thought it worked great.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're happy with the work, I'm happy with the work, and I had a good time.
Good. Perfect. What's something about my directing style that you liked?
I liked the direct nature. You knew what you wanted right away, and you communicated it well.
Okay, good.
So getting, understanding what you wanted out of each shot, and how you expected it to look is really important because, understanding just it's not my acting is the easy part as far as knowing where you have to be, how you're going to be not portrayed, but just how you're going to come across in each scene is really important to all of the formula.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It was tough to, like, I mean, as you said, we shot it out of order, so it was like, and as you said, it was tough to, like, okay, where are we exactly? Where is his emotions? It was the really tough part. And thankfully it kind of works out to where it's, like, most of the emotion comes, like, the emotional buildup comes near the end. And we shot most of those scenes, I think, most of those scenes, at least with at one time. So we were able to kind of get the emotion of like when the three of them were in the room with you with the knife, and you're like, "Fuck you, Janet." Like I feel like that was like there was enough being put forth there that it was like, okay, the emotion in the room here is like, or like that needs to be in the scene is like, I don't know what's going on. I got the fuck out of here. Whatever's going on. That's kind of, that is how it came across. So, it and I love the shot with the that I'm glad you guys talked me into doing with the knife. With James walking in through the door from like the side angle, like right, just like a lower portion of the knife that like Lord of the Rings, like they're entering, like,
oh,
like
yeah,
when
yeah,
he walks in. Like when he enters with that knife, it like it looks so fucking cool. It's like it's like perfect. This is great. And is there anything that I could improve on directing style wise?
Nothing comes to mind. But again, it was a short. Yeah. It was a short shoot.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess on the longer ones where you know where they're a lot more stressful.
Yeah, we'll see. I guess. I hope at least.
But in, as far as the short ones, no okay. Notes on improvement at all.
Well, that's good to hear. I generally I ask those questions because it's like it's just kind of perfectionist, as I've been called out by before other people. And I don't think of things like they need to be perfect. I think of things like what I did needs to be the up to the best of what I got. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, doesn't that really come out in what you produce? Like when when I'm a director for theater, I have no problem, you know, labeling myself as a Nazi director.
Sure.
I am hard on my actors because I tend to know sometimes better than the actors themselves what they're capable of. And I know how to get that out of them, and I will get that out of them.
That is something
And I tell my actors, like, look, you may hate me during this process, but I promise you when it's done, everyone who knows you or doesn't know you, especially the people who know you, though, are going to be impressed by what they see.
Yeah.
You know, somebody coming up to you or me after the show and saying, I didn't know they could do that, is not an uncommon thing.
That's cool. That's a cool feeling to get,
so,
for sure.
So when people, you know, would attack my process as far as, you know, being kind of, you know, being a bit strict and overbearing.
It's about getting the job done, though.
I just look at the end result.
Right.
Like this is what the process, this is what my process gets us. And so I don't try and focus on the critiques so much of the process unless, you know, it's affecting the outcome.
Right. You know. I think that's a good way to take it.
You've got there are a lot of I'm blanking out the right word, eccentric directors, actors, and, you know, it's their process that makes them, it's that their eccentricity that makes them so great at what they're doing and why they get away with doing that.
Right. Yeah. No, literally, yeah. That's kind of, yeah, that's how it ends up being. It, like, you see always people getting out of shit they shouldn't get out of just because they...
Some people are complete assholes about it.
And it's like, I listened to Matt and Shane's Secret Podcast. It's Matt McCusker and Shane Gillis. It's two comics. Mm-hmm. And Shane said something recently on there that was like about fame. It was like, I don't understand how you can't just like, when someone comes up to you like, hey, I'm a fan, can I get a picture? He didn't get like how you can't just say, no, fuck you. You can't say that. He doesn't get why people do that was the thing of it.
Why people are
just so rude about it and just like, and like, I mean, I've never been famous and never been asked for anything,
being famous. It's like, it's being famous is getting your power literally from the other people. So,
right.
You know,
yeah.
From your fandom. So you take care, you should always take care of your fandom. I've been on rare occasions from theater, been asked for my autograph, and I was always ecstatic to give it.
Sure, yeah.
You know, somebody's asking for my autograph. That's freaking awesome.
Hell yeah. Yeah.
That's one of those compliments I like.
Right, yeah. That's a cool one to get. Is there a moment in the film you think will stick with people the most, just based on your out-of-order opinion of the shoot?
I don't know. How beautiful is the opening? Is that opening shot with the bus in the mountains?
Oh, it's really nice. It's really pretty.
That's a really pretty shot. I remember that.
Yeah.
But then there's the intensity in the motel with the patient.
Oh, that's right. Yep. Yep. Which that one, that part looks, I had to take advice on a, from a more experienced film director that I know. Shout out Vance Duplechin. He kind of told me that, like, I didn't even show him anything from it, but I just, like, he said, like, I remember something he said stuck with me on that part was that make sure these shots are quick and tight. And just like, and so it's like, you see that the monster part of what Travis was doing, which looked ridiculous. If you just watch the raw footage, it looks fucking ridiculous. Four frames of, like, and I've still thought about a different edit to make on it where I may make them four different frames, like just like take four individual frames from random spots of his movement and just make them in that order. But I, right now it's just like four frames of just like, you know, so, and it's just like, of like that, or where he's like doing some weird thing. It looks enough to where you're like, oh shit. Okay. I get, yeah, that's, and your response with like, oh, like you step back. And like, that was the only problem that we had the whole time. That one scene was the only problem we had with the filming part of it, was that we did have you ADR the, which actually ended up working perfectly because you did it right on. Probably the audiobooks helped on that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a fun, and it was it was an awful line to try and redo dub.
I know. Because you gotta like stutter it. You did.
Yeah, because I stutter. I'm stuttering the line, and I was just like, oh, I must have messed with it for like 15-20 minutes.
Well, but it works perfectly because, like, well, I mean, the stutter itself works perfectly because you're like, what the fuck is that? And it, like, I've thought about cutting that, but it doesn't make sense to do it. Because I've played with cutting it of like, just like, you know, it goes and you run. It could work like that. If I have to, like, at the very least, like if I had to do like a director's cut type shit, it would include the full part of it. There's probably a couple things I would include the full part of, but I just cut for time's sake. But
well, why are you worried about time's sake? If
because it was like a whole, like a 30-second thing of just like one shot, and I would have probably left it in if I. It doesn't affect the story at all, and so
I never understand when a director's cut comes out shorter. That
doesn't make any sense to me.
Bugs me and bothers me if the director's cut comes out shorter.
That doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah.
Less. It should have more.
It should have more that you didn't want to take out, but you had to take out because of whatever reason. What part of the film's themes, the monotony, liminality, fear of being stuck, that type of thing, hit closest to home?
Oh, more like the fear of everyone being out to get you.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
That more like hit the home, that paranoia of people you already dislike, you know, coming after you anyways.
Oh, was, yeah.
You know, with the exception of James, the other characters are people that, you know,
are not friends to you at that point. Yeah.
Right. And he's the new guy, and you know, he's cool and all, but you don't know him. He could be just as bad as everybody else. And in the end, as far as it's concerned, he does turn into everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the fear. Yeah. That's a good take on that. What is the thing about this film that makes you feel proud to be a part of it?
I have no idea. I'm proud to do it. So far, I've been proud of every production that I've done.
It's, nice. You know,
they're not stupid. They're not. They're not dumb.
Right.
They're. You know, it's not the script that I looked over and looked at and just thought, oh God, this is so awful. But I need the work, or I need the publicity.
Sure.
Yeah, not to be insulted, but there was nothing There was good. Nothing.
Good. Good. That's probably the way it should be. At least on the set. Maybe after the fact. I guess we'll see after the fact. Maybe we'll have you back on, talk about it then once I've had it. Maybe I'll figure out a way to have a couple people on that show when we have it actually released and done something with it. I don't quite know. I think it's festivals for sure that'll be and entered in, but it's a matter of which ones at this point, and then also what else is left. Like, there are other ways. I got an in with the, I guess it's right here now, the Emerging Filmmakers Project just recently. I don't know if it's an in, but I just recently was featured in that, so I guess I can probably get another one in if I got that one in. And this one's way much better than the first one that I made. So, right on. That's good. I'll ask you, I got two more questions for you here, and then we'll get out of here. This is a question I ask everybody. Aside from people or animals, if your house is on fire and you can only grab one thing, what are you grabbing?
So if my pets are safe,
pets, people, everybody, anything that is a living, breathing thing is gone, is out of the house already. You have to go, you're going in, you can grab one thing, item wise.
It's probably going to be one of my paintings.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a number of, for a couple of years I painted, in acrylic, and those are all decorate my walls downstairs.
Yeah.
And, I did, abstract
art. Okay, cool.
But it would definitely be one of my paintings. I can definitely picture it be one of two specifically.
Yeah. Cool. That's a good answer. I've had people answer I've definitely, another artist said painting.
You grab something, if you're going to grab something, you grab something that's irreplaceable. Like, one of the things grabbing was my computer. But everything's up, backed up on the cloud, so
you get that computer, would be, you press, yeah, re-download this computer. It's mm-hmm. like, yeah, it's pretty easy.
So it'd be an inconvenience. So that would be like an inconvenience. But my paintings, they're not coming back. Could I repaint them? Yeah, technically, but it would never be
It wouldn't be the same one. It would have to be a different.
And it would never come. And it would more than likely never come out the same.
Right.
Especially, you know, when you paint up. If, especially the way I paint abstractly,
my answer would be also a painting that a friend of mine did of me. I'll show you, it's out in the hall, it is a painting of me. I'll just show you, honestly. It'll work better if I just show you. Everyone that ever listens to this show is known what it is, but okay, then the last question here, I just got, what's next for you? What do you got going on? Anything?
So the only thing I have a feature film I'm going to be in called Big Ass Monsters.
Okay.
And that'll be shooting on Friday.
Oh, hell yeah.
That has been shooting for a while. It's a big green screen production.
Okay, so that'll be interesting. Have you done something like that before?
I've not.
Okay.
But
you'll have to tell me how that is, by the way, because I'm curious.
I don't think I get to be in any scenes with. I don't think I get to be in any scenes with the monster, though.
Okay. Well, still, I just want to know what the experience of that is like, because that's a different way of shooting that is now available to filmmakers. It's
strange. Yeah, and this one is going to be a much bigger production. Like I said, it's been shooting for. Let's see. Oh God, they sent off some test shots and already at the beginning when they of one of my friends, and I was actually rather impressed. Like, wow, you did it on the green screen at the at the library here. You did
that's
that
wild.
That looks good.
Yeah.
And so
it's only gonna get crazier.
So I'm looking forward to that.
That'd be cool. Big Ass Monsters, that's what you said it was called.
Mm-hmm. Big Ass Monsters. Cool. I finally got heard back on The Lawyer's Therapist, which was the other short film I did last year that hadn't been released, where I star in. It's a full length.
Oh, nice.
Full length. Well, I shouldn't say a full length short film.
40 minutes, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
cool.
So that one,
that's kind of my next idea.
Did get done, and I will apparently get to see that hopefully in the next few weeks.
Awesome.
Well, dying to
let me know when that comes out often.
Yeah, I'm dying to see anything I've done.
That's cool.
I mean, if you're interested, recently we had the 48-hour film festival back in Colorado Springs. Oh,
you were in that?
I was in
it. Okay, cool. How'd you guys do?
Second place.
Fuck yeah, dude.
And I got...
Hold on, wait, we got this one.
All right. And I got best actor.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. That's awesome, dude.
So that was... That one got me by surprise. Like, wow, we didn't win, but I got best actor.
That's fucking dope, fucking dude. Awesome. Congratulations. That's awesome. Oh, fuck yeah, dude. Hell yeah, dude. That's one of those things that's like, you don't really, it's not really like, at least when I've thought about it, it's like, I'm not doing it to get an accolade. I'm doing it because I'm an artist and I have to make this shit. But like, because I love it, is really why I have to make it. But it's like, it's, when it's, someone tells you like, hey, like, you know, we thought this was great. Here's an award. It probably does feel amazing.
Oh no, absolutely. Yeah. Especially when it comes from strangers. So you don't.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't, you know, it's legit. It wasn't people, it wasn't nepotism or people voting for their friends.
Right.
Which, you know, one of the reasons I don't do karaoke contests, cause it's always about who's got the most, who brings the most friends to the, to the contest. And that's not how you get the best decide the best person.
Nope.
So
I know all about that. cool. Well, I guess, do you have any socials or anything you want to plug or anything? Anything else you want to plug on there?
No, I mean, if you want to follow my Instagram, it's John's Lost Cause.
Okay.
JONS, John's Lost Cause. And, same on Threads. And that's about as much social media as I put out publicly.
Yep, I get that. I have to re-download the apps to get things out today. Like that, I have to be on Instagram because I'm going to delete them again because I just like I have been wasting way too much fucking time on Instagram and whatever. Because it's just like it's like an addiction. It's truly an addiction where I just swipe over to the left side. And it's just like there it is, and it's just like I've got to delete from the fucking home screen. It's on the fucking, and I still just go all the way over. It's like, dude, it doesn't work. I gotta figure that one out.
That much into it. No,
I'm not into it. It's just a dopamine hit. It's just a dopamine hit. I just need to find something. I've been doing a lot better since I like
got. So I take it you don't have TikTok.
No, thank God.
I
never got into that. I have an account for the podcast and I posted 2 clips on there. Maybe.
And I have an account for my book reading, and I posted once.
Yeah, and it's just like, I can't do that to myself. Like, I can't start scrolling on that shit. That is so addictive.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. But, all right, we'll get out of here on that. Everybody that is listening, you can send your comments, questions, concerns to malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com. We have the Instagram page, malfunctionjunctionpodcast, at the beginning of that. And then, for following updates on Night Cook, you can follow Crucible Media_. That's the other one. And then I think, and again, please donate to Night Cook. We still need that money.
Yes, please donate. Money is always good.
Yes. So on that note, thank you, John, for joining us. Everybody else, thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your day.